Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
All right, last night, for no reason other than the fact that I had some Italian sausage in the refrigerator that I needed to cook, I decided to make some pasta sauce. So I got out this giant cauldron to make the sauce in, and what ensued was me following a recipe that my grandmother had just laid out to me before I went to college. She sat me down and said, "You're going to watch me make this sauce." And I made the sauce. I'm doing the same sauce my grandmother made. I didn't make any pasta. I just made the sauce last night, cooked for hours, and then supposedly we're going to have some pasta later tonight. It's like a 24-hour thing. Nick Aliotti, former Oregon defensive coordinator, man of the world, joining me now. Your mouth watering?
You're making me salivate, John. And the best thing about doing the sauce the night before is it's nice and thick when you're ready for it. And there's nothing like a good, thick red sauce.
Only red. You know, you and I have had this conversation via text. I never, as a kid, grew up, I never had, like, the Alfredo sauce, the white sauce. You know, I never had anything like that. I'd have pesto, but I would never have Alfredo. I didn't have Alfredo. I was in my 20s at, like, a Marie Callender's restaurant or something like that.
Same for us. We were always, it was always a red sauce. You know, even pasta with garlic. We've had paste with garlic way back when, and even that was a red sauce. They made it into some kind of red sauce. I haven't had that in a while, but it's pretty good.
All right, Coach, let's talk some defense. Oregon and Washington facing, you know, hiring a new coordinator. And, you know, let's just start first with, you've worked for coaches who were offensive-minded. You pointed out Chip Kelly left you alone, let you do your thing. You had the defense, he had the offense. How different is it when you have, like in Washington's case, Jimmy Lake's a defensive-minded guy, Oregon, Mario Cristobal, kind of an offensive lineman type guy. How different can those coordinator jobs be with head coaches being very different?
Well, you would have to think Jimmy Lake is going to have a hand in the defense there. Now, when you're the head coach, it's tough to divide duties and be the head coach and also be on one side of the ball. Guys have done it. Guys still do it. Leach, Chip Kelly. There's a number of guys that do that. But just like Justin Wilcox has a hand on the defense through Peter Sermon at Cal, I would have to think that Jimmy Lake, last year he had it made because with Pete Krakowski, him and Pete had worked a long time together at Washington, probably didn't have to do much or change much. But whoever he hires now, I think he'll have a hand in that. Conversely, I think at Oregon, Mario will let that guy, for the most part, do his thing. Mario's got a tough job in picking this defensive coordinator. In fact, they both do, because I think there's two guys on his staff right now, Coach Wilson and Keith Hayward, the secondary coach, who probably both want that job at Oregon. So does Mario stay in-house or go outside? Now, there's a lot of tentacles to that answer there, but that's how I see it different right now.
Nick Aliotti with us, former Ducks defensive coordinator. You know, you've done it at a high level a long time. Maybe you can help us a little bit with, as a coordinator, do you need a certain coordinator if you're going to play fast pace, meaning like a Chip Kelly style when he was at Oregon? You know, you had to change how you called games on the defensive side. How challenging was that to go from what Mike Bellotti did maybe, in the old days to suddenly Chip Kelly wanting to, you know, give you an extra 20 plays a game that you had to defend?
Absolutely. With Chip, you know, it was interesting. The last, and I'm going to be close to this number, my last couple years there at Oregon, we defended, even in games where the other team didn't score much, 80-plus plays. Conversely, I remember checking and looking at Stanford, and they were defending 54 to maximum of 60 plays during that same period. Well, in today's wide-open game, John, if you have to defend 20 to 25 more plays, there's 20 to 25 more opportunities for there to be a busted assignment or an explosion play, which is a big play over 25 yards. So defending a lot of plays puts a little bit more pressure on you. But the good news with Chip, we were scoring a lot of points, and therefore we jumped out a lot of times on people and got scores. So I tried to tailor the defensive calls to saying, okay, we'll give up as many threes for sevens as we have to, or we get a couple stops and we're scoring. That made my job easier.
You've talked about the communication that you had, because we all wonder when we see coaches on the headsets what they're talking about. But you've said Chip Kelly, did he not talk to you at all, or did he not just tell you what to do during games?
It's the most uncanny, I don't even know the word to describe it. In four years, with Chip being the head coach and me as the defensive coordinator, he never said a word on the headset to me. I've never been around that. I'm talking about not even in the Cal game. I can't remember the year now. It might have been 2012, I don't remember the year, where we went for it on our first possession, backed up on our own 25-yard line, and went for it on fourth down or something like that. It was about that yard line. But he never said, I'm going for it. Obviously, I could see him going for it or see the punter not come on the field. But Chip, there was no communication, which I absolutely loved. I absolutely loved it. And with the other guys, really Mark, not much. Mike a little bit more, because Mike and I had a history. Most of the time we would argue over stuff, and in a good way, hopefully. And then with Rich being a defensive coach, to your question early with Lake and Mario, Rich, and I was a younger coordinator at that time, had a lot more input than all of them.
It's so interesting that, you know, and you adapted well. Like, were there big conversations about that? Or, because I know you started playing more guys, you started rotating in defensive linemen. I suddenly was seeing more numbers in the participation chart. There had to be conversations, at least in the off season, where you went, look, if we're going to play this way, and I'm going to have to defend 80 plays instead of 54 plays, I'm going to have to play a whole bunch of other guys.
Well, when Chip first came in as the offensive coordinator, you know, 2 years prior to becoming the head coach, I have to admit, hated it. Mike wanted to go this fast-paced thing. Everything was fast. And I'll admit, everything was tailored to the offense. That sounds terrible, me saying it, but everything was tailored to the offense. So I said, okay, if we're going to combat this thing, there were times in practice that we were running back from the last play, because they would just send a new group out there, and they were already lined up for the second play, and they were just going to run it regardless if we were ready or not. So we had to learn how to platoon ourselves and play like a hockey team. First of all, you're not changing complete lines, complete 11, but 3 D linemen, couple linebackers, things of that nature, in and out, and playing at a fast pace. And then every call, we learned to adapt where my hand signals, we didn't huddle on defense, and every defensive call was no more than one hand gesture, and that meant the whole thing. So, in a sense, where I hated it initially, John, it actually made me a better coach, I think, in the long run, and made me have to change how I was thinking. And so we went to just real quick signals where one look at what it was meant the whole defense.
That's amazing, and you have to do that. And I still today will see some of that stuff that has bled certainly into the NFL and other places where, you know, the Patriots and others picked up on what you guys were doing and borrowed it as well. Nick Aliotti, former Oregon defensive coordinator with us. What makes a good coordinator? Because you know, you came up as a young guy. You played offense in college. Were you a running back? Is that right?
I was a running back at UC Davis, and really the first 11 years of my career, I coached running backs, receivers, and even 1 year I coached for 2 years I coached the offensive line. And I was a special teams coordinator in the NFL, coached outside backers, coached secondary, and then Rich gave me my first shot as the defensive coordinator in 93, where I coached the secondary, the nickel and dime, and obviously was the coordinator.
When you're a special teams coordinator in the NFL, and, you know, there's some part of you that's at the mercy of, you know, you're in a game against a dangerous return guy, so much of your of how you're going to be judged comes down to, like, those kickoff and punt returns, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, the punt return, really the two areas, to be honest with you, punt return I liked when we were returning punts because it was like a defensive play. If you were going to try to set up a block or something, overload or disguise or whatever, I loved punt return. But punt, you better spend some time on your punt team because, trust me, you get a punt blocked, very few games are won when that team has a punt blocked. I don't know what the statistics are, but I'll bet you when you give up a special teams punt being blocked or a touchdown on special teams, you're probably going to lose those football games. But the one you really got to spend time on, John, is punt. And the other thing with that is in the NFL, I did it in the NFL, which is kind of cool because you have the whole team. You are like, in a sense, a head coach at times, because you'll have a 45-minute meeting, at least that's how we did it. Every morning, I had the whole team in a room for a 45-minute meeting, and it's just you and the team. A lot of times, you get a couple coaches there, but for the most part, all the other coaches were busy working, and they don't want anything to do with special teams until something goes wrong. They don't want any part of it. So I love the autonomy of being a special teams coach.
All right, you've seen Oregon play. You kind of know the style that they want to play. I think Mario Cristobal, you know, wants to smash people. He wants to run the football a little bit. Is there a certain type of defensive coordinator that you think fits well with the way Oregon plays on offense?
I don't know if I could answer that, John. What I would say, the way I would answer that, is this way. I think you have to be a great communicator if you're going to be a coordinator with your staff, okay? And I always used to say we need to crack the code, and your staff, you have to coach your staff to a certain degree to where there's no stone unturned and they are exactly, are we on the same page? I used to say that all the time. Make sure that they're all on the same page. So you must be a great communicator with your staff so that when you go out there, you're all on the same page. Everybody knows what you're doing. And secondly, just how you treat people, how you treat young men. In today's world, things have really changed. You must communicate with your players and make them understand their role, how you view them, have a meeting with them. So really just, if you get a good, solid guy that knows X's and O's, you must have an answer for everything also. A good defensive coordinator is always preparing for war in time of peace. Have to be ready for the next thing. And I know football is not war, but that's just the way we used to communicate it. You must be ready for anything because there's a number of times that you practice, John, you practice what you think you're going to see, and in the first quarter, you finally are really seeing what they're doing, and you must adjust. So therefore, you come all the way back, as I said, to the communication to be able to get your staff to understand what you want to do and in turn them imparting their knowledge to the defense on what they need to do.
Nick Eliotti with us, former Oregon defensive coordinator. Look, I think that college football is so interesting, and it's fun to talk about. You've had I think the pleasure of being part of the Pac-12 network and working with some great people on the Pac-12 network and being an analyst there. Can you maybe just speak a little bit about some of the people you've worked alongside on the network? Because we hear a lot about, hey, the network's not available. There's a lot of belly aching about it. But there are a lot of talented people who work for that network, yourself included, that I think have been one of the highlights of the conference wanting to do that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been very lucky. You know, I fly in on a Friday night when it wasn't COVID-19. I'd fly in on a Friday night. I go in, Saturday in the studio, and the people I touched or worked with were all pros. I thought they were outstanding. Mike Yam was an excellent, excellent gentleman in his job. Ashley Adamson, fantastic. Yogi Roth. Boy, how sharp is he? How good is Yogi? Yogi was outstanding. Nigel Burton, Evan Moore, all the people that I was with, and then you got Bob Schmelzby and Adam Stankel, who behind the scenes as producers, Christine Jacobson. The people I saw were just, you know, I never saw the Larry Scott. I never saw the Mark Shukin. I very rarely saw the Larry Myers. I rarely saw the Woody Dixons. You know, I didn't see those people. It was just the people that worked on Saturday that were doing that studio show that I was around. And as far as I'm concerned, they were all pros and took that job very seriously.
I think a lot of people are hopeful that this conference will get some good leadership and maybe get back to the point where nationally it's competitive and you've got playoff teams again. You've been there. You've been there as a coordinator a couple times playing for national championships. How much does it hurt you to see the conference sort of struggle in the eyes of the country, the brand of the conference?
It's tough the way we get treated, you know, and no offense, but Larry's had something to do with that. But I'm not going to bash anybody. Certainly not going to beat anybody when they're down. But I heard some of the names you talked about earlier, Bob Bowlesby. I know Bob Bowlesby. I interviewed with him at Stanford way back when. I think he's sharp. Greg Byrne, no Greg, no Bill. I think he's sharp. And I'm going to think outside of the box, and here's one for you that I think would do an outstanding job. And he doesn't know I'm going to say this right now. Rick Neuheisel. I think Rick Neuheisel, with his communication skills, his ability to get in front of people, his thinking outside the box, his caring for the Pac-12, and been at three different universities in that league, and knowing a lot about the conference, I think he would be somebody that I think they should consider an interview. And I have no idea if he's even interested, but I just think, thinking outside the box, I think he would be outstanding.
It certainly would be somebody who understands football, right? And I think the conference has struggled with that to this point. Coach, I wish you the best. I hope there are many pasta sauces, red sauces in your future. And thank you for making time for us. I love that you listen to the show, and I appreciate when I drag you on that you come on.
John, you never drag me on. I love the show. You're outstanding at what you do. Not just saying that I love it. I listen to it almost daily, and I need a report on how that sauce turned out. All I need is a simple text. I want to know. I want a report.
Let me just tell you this. It was so good. I didn't have any pasta last night, but I put some in a bowl and I ate it straight.
I love it. Good for you.
You
had to dip the bread in it.
I did. You know, Anna, she's Asian. She's like, how do I eat this? I said, get a piece of bread. That's how you eat it.
Banya.
Oh, Nick Aliotti, you're the best. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, John. Have a great day.
All right, there he is, the Culligan Water Cooler Report, coming up next. Every day on the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report. It's brought to you by Culligan of Oregon. We're going to open the phone lines and kick this around the water cooler.
Meet me at the water cooler.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
Larry Scott out as the Pac-12 commissioner. Josh in Portland's called in. If you want to join the conversation, you can at 503-417-7575. Josh, go ahead.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call, man. Listen, I was listening to your Q&A session on that Zoom, and I'm going to preface what I'm about to say with the idea that, listen, I totally get that the Pac-12 is in a tough spot and that they need to be very careful with how they portray the state of the conference when talking about issues of the past when moving forward, okay? So let me preface what I'm about to say with that. However, that being said, I felt like so many of their answers were completely tone deaf to some of the things that they themselves even talk about are their own priorities. For example, when you ask them a question about how much they're paying for the building in San Francisco, and they can't come out and give...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.